Raw for the past 2 weeks has been cooking. Last week, not as good as the week before. Tonight, not as good as the last 2 weeks. Raw tonight, I thought, did a decent enough job of setting up the key matches for Bash in Berlin, which is coming up not this weekend, but next weekend. We had Randy Orton and Ludwig Kaiser in the main event tonight. Randy Orton is, of course, challenging Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship in Berlin. Gunther was ringside for the match tonight. In fact, that's how the show went off the air, with a kind of a lame brawl, if I'm going to be honest with you, between the two. Although I did hear from someone who was in the building tonight that Orton did drop Gunther with an RKO. Maybe it was supposed to air on TV and they ran out of time, but we didn't get to see that. But I thought they had a good main event. There were some good matches on the show tonight. There were some a couple of hot segments as well, again, including Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, and The Judgment Day. So the last couple of weeks, that's been great. And the fans are really responding to that, and they really are dying to see Dominic get riptided, if that's a thing, riptided by Rhea Ripley. We are getting the mixed tag in Berlin. Maybe we'll get it there. So that was a hot angle tonight. Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed has become a must-see part of Monday Night Raw in just the last few weeks, which is a huge turnaround from what they were having him doing over the last few months. You talk about a turnaround. This man has become an attraction on this show, and tonight it was the equivalent of the guy who bullies people until one day a big guy comes in and says, "Why don't you try picking on somebody your own size?" That's what we had tonight at the end of his match with The Miz. And then we had CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. Now, it was very clear from last week that they were setting up a strap match for Berlin. I mean, we saw the strap. It seemed pretty clear that was the direction that we were headed off in. We had Punk in the ring tonight for a promo, and it's rare that you have CM Punk in the ring for a promo, and it's anything but very good. Obviously, that is one of his strong suits. That is one of the things that draws people in to want to see him on TV. Tonight was the worst segment that we have seen with Drew McIntyre and CM Punk since the beginning of the year. Since they began feuding, since they've had all the back and forth promos, and we've seen, you know, countless angles with them. We had their first match at SummerSlam. All the stuff that we have seen with CM Punk and Drew McIntyre this year. And this segment tonight was no good. This was the worst of all of them. And it was the worst because this is not the CM Punk that people want to see. People don't want to see CM Punk go out there and pander to the people. And that's what he was doing tonight. It felt forced. It felt like, all right, I have to come out here and this is the material that they have for me. And you don't ever want to feel that way during a CM Punk promo, because if WWE is going to pay him to be on TV, there's a certain type of CM Punk promo and a certain type of CM Punk segment that people expect. This is not what I want to see from CM Punk. It feels very uninspired. And even for his part, McIntyre, it wasn't even just Punk, just the entire segment just fell very flat, which was too bad, because usually they're some of the best parts of the entire show. Tonight, that was not the case. We're going to talk about all of that and more, because it was a three-hour show, and so we have a lot more than just what I mentioned here to get into. But this is your Monday Night Raw review. It is Monday, August 19th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Like and subscribe if you are new here. Welcome to the channel. We've picked up a few new subscribers in the last few days, so I thank you for that. Super chats are open. We've already had a bunch of them come in. You will see them pop up on your screen as new ones come in. If you want to send one in, it'll go pop, and there it'll be. And I will read them. So if you have questions, comments, send them on in. We'll hang out a little bit later and go through all of your messages. I also have a big thank you to send out to all of you, because Episode 875 of The Sound Of went up yesterday on all the usual audio platforms. And would you take a look at that? Number 4 on Apple Podcasts in all of the United States for wrestling shows. Sound Off 875. Yes, indeed. I got into the Mark Henry comments about Vince McMahon, among other things. A lot of talk also about Tony Khan and AEW and their attendance woes and these big stadium shows that they're going to be doing in 2025. A lot of content there. So if you missed episode 875, go check it out. And thank you. We're in good company here on this list. Not bad. Not bad. In the top five. I love to see it. I want to see more of it. So if you missed the show, make sure you go back and check that out. Speaking of missing shows, Pat McAfee is going to be leaving for a while. Pat McAfee was on Raw tonight with Michael Cole. That will be the last time that we see Pat McAfee on Raw until Raw moves to Netflix in January. So I guess tonight was Pat's final Raw on USA Network. He is going back to do College Game Day, so that's going to take him away from WWE for a few months. They even had an on-camera tonight where Michael Cole was putting him over, and they had a video package they put together of Pat's moments from this year, which Pat did not know about. He did not know they were going to do that. So that was a nice moment. But yeah, Pat's going to go away, and for those who don't know, Joe Tessitore, who they hired, I think last month, from ABC and ESPN, and he still works for them, but they are bringing him in to be the new play-by-play voice for SmackDown. That he's going to start on Raw. In fact, his first night on Raw is September 2nd, which is only a few weeks away. What's going to happen is McAfee is gone for now. Michael Cole is going to be doing SmackDown for the next few months with Wade Barrett. Joe Tessitore is going to take over on Raw at the beginning of next month with Corey Graves. And that's the way that it will be until we get to January. And when Raw moves to Netflix, Michael Cole will flip back to Raw. McAfee will join him, and Tessitore will move over to SmackDown to join Corey Graves and Wade Barrett, and they'll have a three-man booth on USA on Friday night. So that is the plan as far as the announced situation is concerned. But yes, this was Pat's last night for a while. Let us hope that Joe Tessitore and the Tessitore experiment goes better than it did with one Adnan Virk and Jimmy Smith. And Jimmy Smith wasn't even that bad, but he didn't last very long either. Hopefully the Tessitore thing will work out better than those did. So Randy Orton was out first to open the show, and he welcomed the fans to Monday Night Raw. He said the next time he makes that introduction, he will be standing before us a 15-time world champion. Gunther made his entrance. Orton didn't really have a whole lot to say before Gunther came out. Gunther walked out. He had the title around his waist. He was dressed in his casual clothes, and he got Dominic Mysterio-level heat in front of this crowd. They were in Florida tonight. Every time he opened his mouth, as soon as he brought the microphone to his mouth and he opened his lips, the people would boo him out of the building. Everything a heel could possibly ask for. It's exactly the kind of reaction that you dream about. So the crowd started chanting USA. He mocked them. Maybe they were chanting for the network. I don't know. But he mocked them for only having three brain cells, which is two more than he should give them credit for. Gunther told Orton that he would never hit him with another RKO ever again, which he was proved to be a liar by the end of the night. If you were in the building, we didn't see it. Gunther said that he would leave Orton a bloody mess in Berlin and expose him as a very successful yet very underachieving one-trick pony. Orton warned Gunther that he would be on an 8-hour flight next week or next. Well, yeah, next week, I guess they're leaving, right? Because I think SmackDown next Friday is in Germany. But he warned Gunther that he would be on an 8-hour flight to Berlin with a size 15 extra wide boot up his ass. Now, I have never experienced that before, but I would imagine that having a size 15 boot up one's ass would be bad enough. Extra wide sounds very uncomfortable. So start a UPN chant, says Hurricane. Yes, why not? I'd mark out if the fans randomly broke into a UPN chant, sure. Or how about the 16 different networks that TNA aired on back in the day? Remember, they were on Spike. They were on Destination America. They were on Pop TV. And they were on a whole bunch of other ones, too. Those are the only ones that stand out to me, though. It's amazing how many places they've moved around over the years, and yet there they are. They're still around. Now they're on Access TV. So Ludwig Kaiser ran in. He went after Orton, who cleared him from the ring. Orton then turned his focus to Gunther, but Kaiser returned and clipped his knee from behind. And when Orton got back to his feet, Gunther put him down with a clothesline, and then Imperium stood tall over Randy Orton to close out the segment. So a simple segment. I thought it was effective, you know, to set up the main event for later in the show. Pretty paint-by-numbers stuff, honestly. Kaiser, though, he got a big spot in the main event tonight, and I don't know how many of you saw it, but I did see that The Undertaker, on his podcast, had some very nice things to say about Ludwig Kaiser. He had the chance to hobnob with him. I think it might have been backstage at SummerSlam, but whatever show it was recently, he had the chance to talk to Kaiser. Kaiser got to sit under the learning tree for a little bit, and Undertaker said that he was very impressed with Kaiser and that there could be big things in his future now that he is breaking out of Gunther's shadow. And I agree. I agree. Kaiser is an impressive guy. Kaiser eventually will, I mean, he's still kind of in Gunther's shadow. He's still literally shadowing him. But there will come a point where the two of them will not be together anymore. He'll be able to break out on his own, and I think he'll do well. I don't know what his ceiling is, but I think that he'll do well. Certainly, I think, is maybe an intercontinental or U.S.-level contender, because he is very good. But I think for so long, he's just the guy standing behind Gunther. He's the goon behind Gunther. And when that changes, I think more people will be able to just appreciate the fact that he's actually a really good talent. And even The Undertaker can see that, which is nice. We had Sheamus one-on-one with Pete Dunne in what I believe is the first time ever that these two have gone one-on-one in a match before. Sheamus came into the match with his hand wrapped after an attack by Dunne last week with a shillelagh. And that was Dunn's target throughout the match here. During the commercial break, I will mention, again, I had a spy in the crowd tonight. And during the commercial break, Samantha Irvin got on the mic, and she said that Pete Dunne does not want to be called Butch. So you can imagine what the crowd then followed with. So they're leaning into it, which we knew they were doing just based on that sit-down, empty arena interview that Dunne did on the show. I guess it was last week. And they brought up Butch. Butch has not been mentioned in months, so why would they bring it up? They're bringing it up because they want the crowd to have something to chant to annoy Pete Dunne when he's out there. So instead of sitting on their hands, they chant Butch. Sheamus tried fighting back, but Dunne targeted the hand and then did the 10 beats. But he didn't follow up, so Sheamus hit 20 beats of his own. Dunne avoided a brogue kick and tried a moonsault, but Sheamus caught him in midair with a rising knee strike out of midair for a near fall. Dunne came back with a sit-out powerbomb for two. Then he trapped Sheamus's injured hand in the middle turnbuckle in the corner. You know, they have that sleeve. He basically put his hand through the sleeve. And Sheamus had to sit there and act like he was trapped, like he was handcuffed, and he couldn't get free. And Dunne backed up. He charged in. He kicked the injured hand. So Sheamus, he just ended up ripping. He went like this, and he ripped the turnbuckle pad off. And then he just blasted Dunne. He wiped him out with a brogue kick, and he pinned him to win the match. I like that finish a lot. Little surprised that they had Sheamus go over here, especially with one hand. He was basically like a one-armed man. But when it was over, Pete Dunne was looking back at him as Sheamus was in the aisle, and Dunne had a big smile on his face. He looked like a crazy man. He looked like he was admiring the work. Even though he lost, he was admiring the work that he did in injuring Sheamus' hand. So there will be more. Gave me hope there. Obviously, this will not be a one and done, even though he did lose clean, and that surprised me. But this will not be the end of the issues between Sheamus and Pete Dunne. This was just part one. I hope to see more, because what we got here was good. And I'm sure what they could give us is even better than that. So I hope we get to see more. And look, Sheamus is a consistently, I would say, as consistent as anybody on that roster, as far as going out there, and you know you're going to get a good to very good match out of him every single time. And the fans are going to get into it as well. his track record is very good since he came back. You know, I know it's part of his gimmick to go out there and say banger after banger, but it's true. You know, Sheamus goes out there and he delivers every single time. Pete Dunne can more than hold his own. So it makes for a good combination. So I enjoyed this. Now backstage, Odyssey Jones stood with Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods in the locker room as they were preparing for their battle tonight against the Final Testament, or Final Testicle, as Kofi Kingston called them. Kingston and Jones did the New Day! Did the New Day chant there. Woods, though, he looked unamused. He did not participate in this chant. I think I just woke up the whole fucking neighborhood by doing that. Jones walked off, and Kofi, he got very quiet, and he said to Woods, look, is everything okay? Because your energy is, it's a little off these last few weeks. Woods said, you know, he wished that Kingston would have just talked to him before bringing Odyssey in, because to him it just feels like he's replacing Big E. And Kofi said, nobody is trying to replace Big E. Nobody can ever replace Big E. That's not what this is at all. And he asked Woods if he remembered how hard it was to get the New Day off the ground 10 years ago. And Woods said, yeah, I remember. And how everybody was laughing at them. And he said that they're family. Nothing will ever change that. He said, Jones right now, Odyssey Jones, he's in a similar spot right now. You know, he's just in right now to the Raw roster and just looking for somebody to take him under his wing in a way that Kofi said he wishes that when they came in, somebody would have taken them under their wing. So that's all this is. And Wood said, you're right. I'm the problem. I'll fix it. So Jones re-entered the locker room. He gave Woods a big old bear hug that looked like it was a little too a little too aggressive for Xavier's liking. It was a good segment and a little more serious than we're used to from these New Day segments, which was a welcome change, them having a serious conversation backstage instead of doing their usual shtick. But I will say, it's hard to take either of them seriously when they're standing there literally dressed up as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is what they were dressed up as. So as I sit here and tell you that it was nice to have a more serious New Day segment, you have to just picture in your head, as they're standing there, having this very serious conversation, they are dressed as turtles. So, I mean, how serious can it really be? We had Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile. They were scheduled to have a match. Ivy got in the ring after Maxine was already out there. And clearly, she was not taking Maxine seriously, because before the match even began, she turned her back to her. And when she turned her back to her, Maxine gave her a dropkick. And Ivy rolled out to the floor. Maxine threw her around ringside for a little bit, including over the announce desk, before they ended up back in the ring. Ivy made a comeback, and the lights went out. A signal that the Wyatt Six were on their way. Chad Gable and the Creeds, they got into the ring to stand with Ivy. Nikki Cross, finally identified by Michael Cole by that name. This is the first time I can remember them mentioning the name Nikki Cross. So he identifies that, hey, that's Nikki Cross. She does a Fez press in the ring, takes down Ivy Nile, while the other members of the Wyatts attacked American Maid. This ended with Chad Gable surrounded all by himself in the ring by all the members of the Wyatt Six. The only one missing was Bo Dallas. There was no Bo Dallas. There was no Uncle Howdy. But you could hear a commotion from the crowd. The camera panned out, and there behind Chad Gable was Uncle Howdy. He joined the rest of the family. He grabbed Chad Gable. He gave him a Sister Abigail, left him laying. I never heard a bell, so I don't believe this match ever officially got underway. So it was a no contest. I don't even know if you can call it a no contest. It just never started. How can you call it a no contest? It's just nothing. Nothing official here. But what they did was they clearly gave us an indication of who the first opponent is going to be for Nikki Cross. And I'm sure soon, well, they didn't announce it for next week, but we should be getting a Nikki Cross Ivy Nile match soon. And later in the show, they made it official, because we didn't see the Wyatt Six again for the rest of the night, but they did make it official that next week on Raw, the final Raw before the Bash in Berlin, we are going to get Uncle Howdy for the first time ever in a match, one-on-one with Chad Gable. So we are finally going to get that match on TV next week. It is hard for me to envision Uncle Howdy, this character, losing in his first match. I thought that when we eventually got the match, what they might do is Chad Gable against Bo Dallas, and maybe Chad beats him. And Bo has to, you know, dig down deep within, and the next time we get it, it's Uncle Howdy against Chad Gable, and then Uncle Howdy wins. Well, they're going right to Uncle Howdy next week. I can't imagine that he loses. So it could be another Chad Gable loss. I mean, at some point, this guy's got to win a fucking match. Maybe they'll surprise me and he'll win next week with a little assist from American Maid. But it's not looking good for Chad Gable. Please, for the love of God, give this man a win. It's like he's allergic to winning. I don't even care if it's a squash. I don't. Put him in the ring with a local talent and let him just chaos theory him over and over and over again. Just to make him look like a beast. Please, just throw Chad Gable a bone here. Because we know this isn't going to end well for him. We got a taped promo from the Terror Twins, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. Priest said that Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio would receive their punishment at the Bash in Berlin. Rhea accused Liv of becoming a discount Rhea Ripley. Not to be confused with the discount Judgment Day that is running around now, or the, as I know many of you have taken to calling it, the Timu version of the Judgment Day. Look at this Chad Gable slander I'm seeing in the chat. Chad Gable, nothing but a loser, nothing but a jobber. Well, when he can't win a match to save his life, I mean, I can't argue it. It's exactly what he is. Give this man a win. CM Punk was out to the ring with a leather strap around his neck to share some exciting news with the fans. But first, he wanted to tell us a story. He said this weekend he spent some time in New York City at an event called Fanatics Fest, which I heard, I know WWE did great business there, but I heard that it was a fucking disaster for a lot of people. But he was at Fanatics Fest, and some fans asked him about this hot streak that WWE is on right now. See, this was the part of the story where CM Punk, I believe the word all the kids use is glaze. He glazed the company. Talked about how great the business is right now. How hot the business is right now for WWE. Selling out buildings, he said, all over the world. This is what the fans asked him about. I wonder if that actually is the case. Because I would imagine that if you are a CM Punk fan, and you go up to CM Punk and you have a question. You have one question that you're going to ask CM Punk. Is the question that you're going to ask him, oh, what do you think about WWE's streak of sellouts? What do you think of WWE's hot business right now? That's not the question you're going to ask. Give me a fucking break. But this is the story that he's telling us, so maybe it happened. But they asked Punk, why do you think company is on such a hot streak, or that you're on such a hot streak? I mean, he's not on a hot streak. He's been back. He's had one match since he came back. He's had one match this entire fucking year. Not counting the Royal Rumble. He's had one match. But he said the answer is easy. Why are we on a hot streak? It's you. It's me. It's us. It's the fans. It's the WWE universe. All of us are the reason why business is booming and why business is so good right now. He said, all the freaks, as he called them. I think he thought he was back on AEW Dynamite there for a second. Punk recalled the first person in line at the event being a woman in a wheelchair. He said the woman stood up and told him that she beat cancer and added that Punk was a source of strength for her. Punk said that he also met a female fan who flew 15 hours all the way from Taiwan for 15 seconds to take a picture with him. It's a good thing he didn't call Taiwan a country, or else John Cena would have appeared on the show to apologize for him. He said there was another fan with a sign who said that he came all the way from Jordan just to meet him. Punk said that means something to him. And everyone in the back, he said it means a lot to him because he was gone for 10 years. He said the fans are the ones who drive him. So he pulled out a fistful of handmade bracelets that fan. And this is the new thing now, because this happens with everybody. It happens with Cody Rhodes says he keeps every single fan-made bracelet that people hand him when he's on the road, when he's at these signings and these meet and greets. Rhea Ripley, I saw footage of her at Fanatics Fest. I could barely see her fucking flesh on her arm. She had so many fucking bracelets on her arm. It's unbelievable. So this is the new thing now. So he pulls out like a wad of bracelets out of his pocket. And he said, it might be a Taylor Swift thing. Then he called himself Taylor Swift for Men. This is not the CM Punk that I wanted to see on WWE television. Yes, he is the Taylor Swift for men. He brought up Drew McIntyre, saying that he hates CM Punk and he wants nothing to do with him after he beat him at SummerSlam. Punk said he thinks McIntyre loves him, and he knows that McIntyre is obsessed with him. And he said McIntyre wants to stay connected to him, which is why he wears a bracelet bearing his wife's name. And there were some chants, if you listen, there were some chants for AJ. There were some chants for AJ Lee in the crowd. And then Punk said, he asked the fans, are you ready to hear some news? And for a second there, you know, because he kind of milked the AJ chants for a few seconds. And I for a split second thought that he was about to announce that AJ Lee was going to be making a comeback. But that's not what it was. He removed the strap from around his neck, said that he spoke with Adam Pearce, and he made McIntyre a bracelet, which was, of course, the strap that he was holding. He said that unless McIntyre is chicken, they're going to have a strap match at the Bash in Berlin. Punk explained how strap matches work, said the rules are that you have to touch all four corners to win. Punk said that he wants the strap match so that he can whip this bitch. That was the edgiest thing he said in the entire segment. And I think one of, I want to say three mentions of bitch on this show tonight, Okada would be very disappointed. He'd be very disappointed. He's looking for at least six or seven. Punk said that he wants to take his bracelet back and leave McIntyre with lasting scars. So Drew McIntyre walked out on stage. He said he thought all week about what he would do to Punk after he got whipped by him last week. McIntyre brought up Punk's challenge and asked, have you started drinking? He said, yes, of course. I accept your challenge for Berlin. But he said he couldn't wait a full week after what happened to him last week, and he asked the crowd if they wanted a little teaser. McIntyre told Punk to lose the strap, and then they could give the fans a show. And Punk said he would give him the strap. This is all very homoerotic here. You know, I see that strap and all these mentions of straps. And it makes me think of Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. It makes me think of the Yappapai strap match from WCW. By this point, WCW was already dying a slow death. The poison was already in the bloodstream and it was coursing through the body. It was only a matter of time before the body just dropped and the heart stopped. But I remember that Yappapai Indian strap match that they promoted, which I always thought when Hogan would say it, it sounded like he was saying apple pie. And so for a while there, I thought they were having an apple pie strap match. Like there was a fucking apple pie on a pole or something. I don't know. It's WCW. They had a fucking pinata on a pole, right? Then they have a Viagra on a pole match. Or maybe the Viagra was in the pinata. I don't know. It's fucking Vince Russo. The fuck knows what goes on in his head. Would it really be a surprise if they had an apple pie strap match in WCW? What am I even talking about? How did I even get on this subject? Anyway, Punk said that he would give him the strap in exchange for the bracelet. So McIntyre removed the bracelet like he was actually considering this. And then, of course, he laughed and said no. McIntyre said that April and Larry are much safer and happier at home with him. And Punk said McIntyre will not be safe in Berlin. Last week, if you remember the show from last week, CM Punk said that he didn't care if Drew McIntyre kept the bracelet. Because it wasn't about the physical bracelet. He said it was about what it represents. Right? That's what CM Punk said on the show last week. Yet this week, he wanted McIntyre to trade him the bracelet for the strap. It was important enough to him that instead of just fighting him and dropping the strap and having a fight like McIntyre wanted, he goes, "If you give me the bracelet back." So which is it? Is the bracelet important to you, so important to you that you need to have it back in your possession, or is it not? I don't know. We're getting conflicting messages here from this man, because I thought last week he basically was like, you know what? The physical bracelet, it doesn't matter to me. It's about what it represents. But apparently he just can't let it go. He wanted that bracelet back. This guy can't make up his mind on what he wants. But again, you know, in this segment, the way this promo started, we had Punk telling us that he wants to tell us a story. Well, that story sucked. All due respect to all the wonderful people I'm sure that he met. That story sucked. I was wondering where the story was going to go. It went nowhere. It was an excuse for him to go out there and to blow WWE and talk about all the wonderful business they're doing. And he was basically in the role that someone like John Cena would have been in back in the day. Or it's the sort of thing I would expect, like Cody Rhodes, who's the champion right now. And I mean, I could see Cody cutting a promo like that. CM Punk out there talking about all these wonderful things and putting over the fans, which he has done before. This is not the first time that we've had him out there. Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say thank you. And the fans, you're great. You're great. Like, this is what CM Punk is doing here? This is the CM Punk that gets people to want to tune in to see what he's going to say. What's he going to say next? Uh-oh, he's got a live mic in his hand. Pipe bomb, right? What happened to that CM Punk? That's not what we got here. This is not the CM Punk that I want to see. This is the CM Punk. This felt forced. It felt out of place. These guys are headed into match number two. This is going to be a strap match. These guys are in the middle of a blood feud. And, you know, it was bad enough at SummerSlam, the way they wrestled that match. It didn't really feel like a blood feud. But, again, why is he out there talking about all this stuff? It just felt very out of place. And hopefully that will change by the time we get to his eventual program with Seth Rollins, because at that point, I don't want to see CM Punk coming out here putting over everybody else and talking about how great everything is. We need to get the CM Punk that's going to go out there with those biting comments and take it to Seth Rollins and really, you know, put him in the dirt and just, you know, on the microphone, outshine him and outshine everybody the way that, you know, typically we see him doing on the microphone. You know, he's somebody that I think if you're opposite him in the ring, you should fear being in the ring with CM Punk when it comes to a verbal joust, because that's his arena. You know, he's traditionally been the dominant force in that arena. This was not one of those promos, though. And you know what? The idea, and people have floated the idea to me before, that at the end of this program with Drew McIntyre, maybe the two of them would do a double turn. I don't see that happening, although I wouldn't mind it. I don't think that happens here, though. But when he goes on to feud with Seth, either a proper heel turn, or even if he just plays the heel role, let the fans choose, and maybe he's more the more heelish one in that program, perfect. That's what I want to see. Or frankly, whatever his next program is going to be. Maybe he doesn't go right into a program at Rollins, but whatever it is, give us heel CM Punk. I'll even take tweener. Tweener CM Punk. Not the CM Punk we got here on this show. This was easily the weakest of all of the Punk and McIntyre segments that we have gotten this year. Even at the end of the segment, when they had their closing statements, there was no heat. It was very quiet in the building. And this was a crowd tonight that, for the most part, was very lively. It was not a bad crowd. It's not like they were sitting on their hands the entire time. And there just wasn't really much in the way of heat here in the segment, especially at the end. So, sad to say, this segment was a miss. But key news coming out of it is they have made it official that a bash in Berlin, not this weekend, but next weekend after that, because the way they were talking about it tonight in some points, it almost sounded like it was this weekend, but it's not. There's another show going on this weekend in Wembley. They're going to be in London, not in Berlin. But at Bash in Berlin, it will be a strap match between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. It will be contested under traditional WWE strap match rules. There have been strap matches before in WWE, in fact, let alone other promotions where you're bound by a strap, but it's, you know, pinfall or submission. That's not what this is going to be. This is traditional WWE strap match rules where there are no pinfalls, I assume. There are no submissions the way that Punk spoke about it here. The way you win is you touch all four corners, all four turnbuckles in succession to win the match. And it makes sense that they're doing it this way because why? It protects CM Punk from taking a pinfall when he loses. And he is going to lose. Drew McIntyre is going to win. I believe right now as I sit here, I'm not doing my predictions early yet, but if I had to venture a guess, my guess would be that I think McIntyre is the favored one here, even though he won at SummerSlam. And you would think that they would trade a win back and forth. That's what I thought, you know, coming into this. But I actually am leaning in the other direction right now. Now, maybe next week we'll see what they do on the show next week. We got one more Raw to go before Bash in Berlin. Maybe I'll change my mind at that point based on what they do. But I don't know. It just feels to me like with that stipulation, McIntyre would be favored. And maybe they're just going to build to a third match, even though McIntyre would be up 2-0. And then Punk gets the win inside the cell. I don't know. That's just, again, this is how I feel right now as I sit here at this moment. But we'll see. We'll see what they do on the show next week. Hopefully they have a better segment than they had here on this show. And look, it could easily go the other way. It could easily go the other way where McIntyre is tagging the turnbuckles. He doesn't see Punk behind him. Punk's tagging him also. And then Punk ekes out a win by touching the turnbuckle and they protect McIntyre by not having to take a pin. Very possible. But I don't know. Just felt to me like it might swing the other way. We had the New Day and Odyssey Jones against the Final Testament. Key spot here in this match, the only spot you need to know about, was the hot tag spot. And I love the camera angle that they had for it because the cameraman was on the apron, positioned in the corner of the baby faces. So you could see Kofi Kingston. He was reaching for the hot tag, and he makes the hot tag to Odyssey Jones, even though Xavier Woods was also putting his hand out. And Xavier Woods was not happy about this. Now, to be fair, Odyssey Jones was closer to Kofi, so it made sense that Kofi would tag him and not Woods. That's not how Woods saw it, obviously. It's not like he meant to disrespect him, but you could tell Woods was bothered by that. But the camera angle. Thumbs up. That was a great shot. So Jones got in the ring. He cleaned house. He had Akam pinned of AOP, but Karrion Kross broke it up. Woods took out Kross with the, Kingston rather, took out Kross with Trouble in Paradise. Rezar launched Kofi across the ring, and then Woods hit Rezar with his springboard top rope elbow drop. Akam put Woods down with a Uranagi. Jones then performed a boss man slam on Akam. And he got the three count to win for his team. After the match, you could tell Xavier Woods was very reserved. Certainly more reserved than Kofi and Odyssey Jones were. And as they were celebrating. And you could tell that Woods was not thrilled about the way things went down. I've said this a couple of times in the last few weeks. They have taken a storyline that was going nowhere. And really just being dragged out and wasn't terribly interesting, wasn't terribly exciting. And they have injected some real life into it with the addition of Odyssey Jones because of the reaction that Xavier Woods has had to this development and not being told about it and feeling like he's in there to replace Big E. I wouldn't be surprised as things degenerate between Woods and Kofi if we see Big E on TV to try to mediate some kind of peace between them. This is interesting to me because I didn't think that they would go through with an actual New Day split. Now I feel like we almost have to get one, even if just for a brief period of time, and then you know you get the big reunion down the road. But that is interesting to me. What they were doing before was not interesting. But they've breathed new life into this story, so now with all of Woods' reactions, I'm genuinely interested to see how is this going to fall apart? How much longer can they take this before we get to that moment where Woods either turns on Kofi or walks out on Kofi during a match? Or it just really reaches its boiling point. Maybe we'll get a very hot, serious segment in the ring. No goofiness, no fun and games, no dancing, no singing, no chanting. We have this meeting in the ring at some point with Kofi and Woods where they just sort of air their grievances. And it's a side of New Day that we haven't seen before. And that might be a good segment for Big E to be involved in. But I like where this is going. Curious where this is going now. I'm paying attention to where this is going in a way that I wasn't before, so that's good. And Odyssey Jones picks up a win. His first win on Raw. Again, everything he does in the ring got a reaction tonight. And again, he's a very charismatic guy, and I think if as long as he could stay healthy, I think he could go very, very far on this show. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. When your schedule is packed and you've got work to do, kids to drive to soccer practice, or something that needs fixing for your parents or your in-laws, it can be hard to make time for the things that you really care about. You know, for me, it's that cardio workout at the gym. Sometimes the day gets away from me, I don't get it in, I'm all pissed off because for me, that's non-negotiable. I have to get that in. But sometimes there just aren't enough hours in the day. Even the things that make us happy, it can be tough to make time for them. When you feel like you have no time for yourself, non-negotiables like that, or like therapy, well, they become more important than ever. Therapy can do incredible things for you. It can help you understand yourself better, better understand the things that may be bothering you, identifying ways to try to fix them. It's okay to ask for help. I know some people, you know, for some of them, that's still a taboo thing. The idea of therapy or asking someone for help, you think you can just figure it out on your own, you're fooling yourself. It's okay to admit that you don't always have all the answers. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be suited to your schedule. Just fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and rest easy knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Never skip a therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. With Big Bronson Reed, who has been making a mess of Raw the last few weeks, just absolute chaos and carnage, follow this man wherever he goes. He was in the ring with The Miz in a no disqualification match that was requested by The Miz because The Miz evidently has a death wish. Before the match, Miz was getting ready in the gorilla position. Adam Pearce is with him, and Pearce tells Miz he doesn't feel good about this. His instinct would have been to suspend Bronson Reed because fining him obviously hasn't done anything. Miz, though, wanted the match, so he agreed to give him the match. And Miz didn't exactly sound like he wanted this match, but he said, "You fight for your friends," and Reed took out R-Truth last week. He said, "I don't have a lot of friends in this industry, but the ones I do have, I fight for." And he said, "I don't know if I want to do this, but I have to do this." And then he walked off into the arena, walking to his doom for this no disqualification match. Miz was tossing chairs into the ring early on, since there's no rules. He threw chairs into the ring. He threw a trash can into the ring. Kendo sticks. The fans were chanting for tables. This was not enough for them. "We want tables." And so he obliged, because for the time being, he's still a babyface. And he pulled a table out from underneath the ring, slid it into the ring. Miz hit Reed with a kendo stick. Reed blocked the next shot, broke the stick over his knee, and then slammed Miz on a trash can. Michael Cole said that it was tough for Adam Pearce to suspend Bronson Reed because Reed has become a massive attraction. And the fans love to see the destruction that he leaves in his wake. Yes, the fans love to watch Bronson Reed killing their favorite baby faces. They loved it when he murdered Seth Rollins, and they chanted one more time when he killed R-Truth last week. I'm telling you, we're the heels here. The fans are the heels. These people, they fight for us. They try to win our trust, and our belief in them is so important to them. They do it for us. And then the moment somebody has a cool finishing move and smashes them like a pancake, people are cheering. They're chanting one more time because we are fickle and because we are the heels. Plain and simple. That's the way it is. Reed crashed into a chair that was wedged in the corner by Miz after Miz sidestepped him. Miz hit a tornado DDT onto a chair and then covered Reed, only got a one count. Reed told him at that point, "Now you piss me off." And Reed eventually put Miz through the table. It was propped up in the corner. He did a Death Valley driver, put him through the table. Then he went up top. The crowd rose to its feet, and he hit the tsunami splash. And he got the three count to notch himself a win here on Raw over a former WWE champion and WrestleMania headliner. After the match, Reed went to go for a second tsunami, but he was stopped at his tracks by Braun Strowman's music, because there's nothing that strikes terror and fear into the heart of your favorite WWE heel than entrance music. It will make them stop whatever they are doing and stare. Because he could have squashed this guy for a second time, but he stood there, and he sort of admired Braun Strowman as Braun came down to the ring. Strowman hit the ring. We had a stare down. He was in the ring. Reed climbed down. He was on the apron. And Reed nodded. He smiled as the segment ended. Bronson Reed, in the span of 3 weeks, has become a must-see attraction on Monday Night Raw. And with Seth Rollins out for a while, I like the fact or the idea. I assume, I hope this is the way it's going to work. I love the idea of them feeding someone like a Braun Strowman to him. We've seen Reed crush Seth Rollins, who's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not a small man, but he's not the biggest guy in the world. R-Truth, same thing, right? These are like, by WWE standards, I would say average size people. So he's been having his way with these guys, and just killing them every single week, The Miz. And so now you have somebody in Braun Strowman, somebody who's as big or bigger than him, coming out and saying, "All right, hey, big boy, why don't you do that to me?" Now he has, they want you to think, he's met his match, right? Now it's a fair fight because he's in there with somebody that's, if anything, even bigger than he is, and surely he won't do to him what he's been doing to all these other people. Now it's important for him to go in there and do exactly that. Braun Strowman, when's the last time we even saw him on TV? It's been weeks. Braun Strowman is not involved in any kind of active angle right now. The active angle is with Bronson Reed. They're putting him over. They're getting him over as a monster, as a wrecking machine on this show. It's more important for him to go over, because they're wrestling next week. It's more important for him to go over, and not only go over, but do to Braun what he did to Seth Rollins and what he did to R-Truth, and put Braun out for a few weeks. Because if he could do it to him, nobody else stands a chance, right? That's the logic behind it. So I like that they're doing this match, and I hope that's the way it goes. Now, could they go to some sort of a no contest, a double disqualification that leads to a rematch, maybe in Berlin? It's possible. Maybe they end up on the pay-per-view. It's not looking that way. You know, Triple H likes to keep it to his five matches. But hopefully, you know, it goes the way that I just described. And that way, when Rollins comes back, you know, this man at that point, he will have run through half the roster. Undefeated. Getting that move over. Crushing people every single week. And when Rollins comes back, you've got a match for bad blood. That's a pay-per-view match, a PLE match. But I can't say enough good things about what they've been doing with this Bronson Reed angle over the last few weeks. They have taken a guy who is just another guy on the roster, and they have made him into something in a very short period of time. And the match itself, by the way, with him and Miz, I thought that the match was fun for what it was. Right? Nothing outstanding, but I had fun with this match. Now, backstage, Sheamus was interviewed by Jackie Redmond, who asked about his hand, which he said did not feel too good. Sheamus credited Pete Dunne for going toe-to-toe with him. Ludwig Kaiser showed up, or as Samantha Irvin calls him, Ludwig. That's his name. Ludwig. Sounds like Mario when he says that, right? Or when she says that. Ludwig. Ludwig Kaiser. I'm going to stop doing that now. Ludwig Kaiser walks in and asks Jackie why she was wasting time talking to the opening act when she should be talking to the guy main eventing the show. Kaiser said once he's done with Randy Orton, he would come right back to Sheamus so that they could settle their issues once and for all. Sheamus said that Kaiser knows where to find him. He'll be at a bar around the corner watching Kaiser take an RKO. I will be surprised if Ludwig Kaiser does not end up on the Bash in Berlin card. Him being from Germany, first PLE in Germany, surely they could find a spot for him on that show. Sheamus is the one who would make all too much sense, and if they want to, they could even throw Pete Dunne in there and make it a three-way match. But if anything, I think the likelier scenario is we get Kaiser and Sheamus, and Pete Dunne gets involved and costs Sheamus the match, and they give Ludwig Kaiser a win. First PLE in Germany, and he picks up a win, even if it is with an assist. That's how I would see it playing out if that match gets added to the card. As of this moment, it hasn't, but it would make all the sense in the world to me to get that man on that show. Kathy Kelly was backstage with the Intercontinental Champion Bron Breakker, who they aired a music video for earlier in the night. It wasn't Wrestle Rock, AWA, but it was a music video. Asked what's next after beating Sami Zayn. Bron was happy he went to a highly educated university because he heard that there would be a tournament starting next week to determine his next challenger, and that was funny to him. He knew that Adam Pearce wanted to slow him down because he was progressing way too quickly. He said it wasn't his fault that he was a badass. It wasn't his fault that he was a genetic freak, more talented than anybody in the locker room. It wasn't his fault that the dogs were barking in every city that they went to, and the fans in the arena barked. You could hear them in the background. They were barking. You know, all this talk about how it wasn't his fault, it wasn't his fault. I couldn't have been the only one who thought of Gene Snitsky. I couldn't have been the only one who thought of Snitsky with this. I will forever associate that with him. That and, punting the baby into the crowd. Braun warned the eventual tournament winner, whoever it may be, I am going to spear you through the floor and give you the beating of a lifetime. And that will be my fault. Now, later in the show, Jey Uso was in the back with Jackie Redmond, and Jey Uso threw his name into the hat to be a part of this tournament to potentially become the Intercontinental Champion. He mentioned that Sami Zayn was going to be taking some time off after his loss last week, and so them challenging the Judgment Day for the tag team titles, I don't even know if that's going to happen. If it does, it's going to have to wait until Sami gets back, whenever that may be. But he said that Sami said to him, just because I'm not here and we're not going to win the tag team titles, doesn't mean that you can't win championship gold. So now Jey Uso has turned his attention back to trying to win his first ever singles title. He's going to try to win the Intercontinental title. Now, they did not announce any of the people who are going to be in this tournament. All they said is that they will be starting the tournament next Monday. So as I looked at the Raw roster, and I go over the roster in my head, Jey Uso obviously will be in it. He's already thrown his name in the hat. That's a tough one because Jey, as over as he is, has lost a lot of big matches. You know, I mean, he was in the King of the Ring and he got beat. He was in Money in the Bank and he didn't win. He's had a few other matches too and he's fallen short. So last big match I can think of that he was in that he won, probably WrestleMania, right, against his brother. He had a title match with Damian Priest at Backlash. He lost there too. He needs to win a match. I can't believe I'm even saying that because he's one of the most over guys on the entire roster, but he's certainly, like, his win-loss record, at least in big matches, doesn't really match up with how over he is right now. I don't know that having him in this tournament and then losing again is the smart way to go. So he may be in the tournament, but then maybe he gets bounced by somebody before he even gets to the finals. Maybe that leads into his next story. Maybe the bloodline gets involved. You need a storyline explanation for that. So that's a bit of a tough spot, though, if he doesn't just go on to win. And they're not taking that title away from Bron Breakker. Like, if Jey Uso, rather, wins the tournament, he's not going to beat Bron. I can't see them taking that championship away from him, honestly, until next year. Maybe even WrestleMania. He's going to have that title for a while. But Jey Uso will probably be in the tournament. Who else should be in the tournament? Sheamus would make sense. Remember, Sheamus' goal is still to win the Intercontinental title. Now, I would rather they wait and build to that match at WrestleMania next year. You do Bron Breakker and Sheamus. And have Sheamus finally win what for him is the big one. Finally win the Intercontinental title in Las Vegas at WrestleMania. I think that would make for a great moment. But how do you not have him in this tournament? And if Sheamus is in the tournament, maybe Pete Dunne is in the tournament, or Ludwig Kaiser is in the tournament. In fact, when we get Sheamus and Kaiser, because they teased it tonight, maybe it's in the tournament. Maybe it's a tournament match. So those are all names that I think will likely be involved. Otis, I could see Otis being thrown in there. One more name I'll throw at you that seems obvious, but he's not really doing anything at the moment. Ilya Dragunov. In fact, if Ilya Dragunov ends up in this tournament, I say he's going to go all the way. And he'll probably be the next program, the next opponent for Bron Breakker. Ilya Dragunov was on the main event taping tonight. He was not on Raw. But if he's in the tournament, he would be my early pick to win. Damian Priest was scheduled to go one-on-one with Dominic Mysterio. That was the second scheduled match on this show. That did not happen. They shot an angle instead. At least here it was another hot angle involving the Judgment Day. As Priest came down to the ring for the match, Dom was already in the ring. He didn't even get into the ring. It was an ambush. It was a setup. It was a trap, which Priest knew, because there was a backstage segment before this with him and Rhea Ripley who warned him. And he said, yeah, I know it probably is a trap, but I just want to get my hands on this little brat. So he went out there anyway. And sure enough, Carlito tried to jump him. He batted him off. JD McDonagh tried to jump him. Finn Balor, he batted them all off. And he was about to chokeslam Balor on the floor when Carlito pulled him to safety. Priest, though, took out McDonagh and Carlito with kicks. Balor bailed. Meanwhile, in the ring, Rhea Ripley appeared behind Dominic. He didn't know it. He turned around, saw Rhea, he went to go turn back around, and Damian Priest was there, and dropped him with a right hand. So then he told Rhea, go outside and go to the table. And Rhea went to the announce desk, and she cleared off the desk, and she went to go set Dom up for a riptide, but Liv Morgan hit Rhea Ripley in the back, cracked her in the back with a steel chair. Balor and the rest of the Judgment Day, they swarmed Damian Priest in the ring, and they had him hanging, basically draped over the middle rope, holding him there, forcing him to watch as Liv Morgan tossed Rhea Ripley over the announce desk and then twice posted her shoulder first into the ring post. The crowd wanted Jey Uso. They were chanting Yeet. They were chanting We Want Jey, which is kind of embarrassing because the Jey Uso segment in the back with Jackie Redmond, I believe that came after this. I could be wrong. Maybe it came before, but I think it came after this. So the idea that the fans are chanting for Jey and they're chanting Yeet and he's there and he doesn't come out to help these people, it doesn't make Jey Uso look like a good friend, because he's been friendly with them, you know, and he's got a thing for Rhea. I mean, who can blame him? But he left them to die. So there was no Yeet, or as Rikishi would say, the Yeet Man. Balor hit Priest with the coup de grace. Morgan hit Rhea Ripley with Oblivion. Dominic hit Priest with a frog splash. And the new Judgment Day stood tall. Tons of heat for this, just like last week, and a great angle. to put more heat on Liv and Dominic going into the mixed tag match next weekend in Berlin. After a break, we got a Judgment Day promo in the back. Finn Balor said that that was just a taste of what would happen to Priest and Rhea in Berlin, and Morgan said that Dom was all man, and she would make Ripley her bitch in Berlin. There it is. There it is. That's the third bitch of the night. I knew it was in here somewhere. They love that word. We had a triple threat match for the women's tag team titles. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn defending the titles against Io Sky and Kairi Sane, and Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. Damage Control and the Pure Fusion Collective. At least they had second thoughts and came to their senses about street trash. You missed that from last week. There was a WrestleVotes report that WWE was very seriously considering renaming the Judgment Day, the new Judgment Day, as Street Trash, which is what Gunther had called Damian Priest when he was still in the group and they were heading into SummerSlam. But that's what they were going to call the actual faction, which would have been fucking stupid. Well, thankfully, we had a follow-up report. That was on Monday. On Thursday, WrestleVotes tweeted a follow-up saying that common sense had prevailed, basically. They heard the outcry on social media. And so the group was going to not be called Street Trash. But Finn Balor, it was his idea, evidently, to incorporate that name. There may be merch made that says Street Trash on it. They may mention it on TV. But they had second thoughts. Which is not surprising, because there was another report this week that Triple H has been seen in Gorilla during these shows scrolling through Twitter and social media, actively monitoring it during the shows for fan feedback. Which, I don't know, I mean, in a way that's great, in a way that's not so great when you consider some of the fucking feedback that you see on Twitter. I mean, you talk about bottom of the barrel with some of these people. I don't necessarily want Triple H to be listening to a lot of the people, most of which are trolls, that are on Twitter peddling some of the nonsense that they do. But if Triple H was scanning Twitter and saw the reaction and he ixnayed the idea, then thank you, Triple H, because that would have been a fucking horrible idea. I'm glad he listened. There was a spot early in this match here with Damage Control, and I'm not really sure what happened here. But what happened was the heels were on the outside. Io Sky and Kairi Sane are in the ring, and the spot is that Kairi is going to come charging in. Io is going to propel her over her head, and Kairi will go over the top rope and will wipe out all the heels on the outside. At least I think that was the idea here. Instead, it didn't quite go that way, because Io was too far. She had her back turned to the ropes, and she was too far away. So when she propelled Kairi over, Kairi did not clear the top rope. And so what ended up happening here was, you know what she basically took? She took the old Ted DiBiase bump. You remember when DiBiase would get bumped out of the ring many times, clotheslined out of the ring? Because he could do it with his back to the ropes. He could do it facing the ropes. He would kind of like drape over the top rope and then use the momentum to propel himself even more, like even higher into the air before he took the bump out to the floor. That is a classic DiBiase bump. I don't know if he stole that and lifted that from somebody else before him, but for me, that will always be the Ted DiBiase bump. That's not exactly what this was, but it kind of reminded me of that. If you want to picture it, she got caught on the top rope and then used that to propel herself out over. There's no way it was supposed to be that way. It was a botch, but it looked awkward. They kept moving on, though. I mean, they kind of played it like, oh, she meant to do that, but she didn't mean to do that. Sonya Deville kept getting involved, so Kairi knocked her off the apron. The distraction allowed Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark to take over. Kairi, though, dropped them both with a flying crossbody. Kairi and Shayna exchanged strikes until Baszler tried a Kirifuda clutch. Kairi escaped and hit a back fist. So Kairi went up to the top rope for an insane elbow as Isla Dawn blind tagged herself into the match. Baszler avoided the elbow by getting her boots up, and she kicked the elbow. as Kyrie came off the top. Then she locked in the Karafuta clutch. Isla Dawn, though, hit Shayna with a backstabber and then held her in place. Meanwhile, Shayna still has the Karafuta clutch applied. Alba Fire now goes up to the top rope and comes off with a senton bomb, covered Shayna for the pin to retain the titles. I thought it was a clever finish. It was a bit of a creative finish there. The match itself, solid enough, nothing special, but it was a solid match. Feels like they're just setting up Alba and Isla to drop the belts right back to Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill soon. I mean, that's really what it feels like to me. And then we had Randy Orton and Ludwig Kaiser in the main event. This did not have as much heat as you would think for Randy Orton's first match on Raw since November. Kaiser chopped Orton to start, so Orton launched him clear across the ring. He launched this man clear across the ring with a big fallaway slam. Orton was about to do a back suplex onto the announce desk, but let go of Kaiser when he spotted Gunther in the timekeeper's area. Kaiser kicked Orton's leg out of his leg and hit a back suplex onto the desk. As Orton leaned up against the ring steps, Kaiser did his run around the ring and dropkick Orton's knee into the steps. Kaiser worked over Orton's leg after a break. He tried the running around the ring gimmick again, but Orton dropped him with a clothesline and then hit a back suplex onto the announce desk. Orton did the back suplex onto the desk three more times. Each time he was glancing over, looking over at Gunther as he did it, like, here, come get your boy. So he's dropping him over and over again on the desk. Orton followed with a power slam. Kaiser, though, blocked the draping DDT and hit a leaping kick for a two count. Orton responded with a superplex and finally hit the draping DDT. Kaiser countered an RKO attempt into a schoolboy for a near fall, but as soon as Orton popped back up, he immediately dropped Kaiser with an RKO out of nowhere. And he pinned him, which, you know, no surprise there. Pinned him to win the match. Now, after the match, Orton invited Gunther into the ring. And this led to what I thought was actually a pretty lame brawl. I mean, we've had some, you know, good brawls that we'll see on these shows, like big pull-apart brawls. That's not really what this was. They just sort of brawled around a little bit. And then the show just suddenly went off the air after Orton poked Gunther in the eye. It looked like he poked him in the eye, and it looked like he was about to drop him with an RKO, but they went off the air. And as I told you at the beginning of the stream, he did drop him with an RKO after they went off the air, and he posed with the World Heavyweight Championship. So they probably just ran out of time, and that was Monday Night Raw. That closed out what I thought overall was a good show. It was not a great show. It was not as good as the last 2 weeks of Raw. Raw still got a good rhythm going here. By and large, the stories seem to be firing. Some stories are just not interesting to me. The New Day story only now is starting to get interesting. The stuff with, you know, the Pure Fusion Collection or Collective, whatever the fuck they are, the Pure Fusion Collective and Damage Control, like, I don't really care about that. There's nothing interesting about that to me. But like the Bronson Reed stuff, I'm enjoying those segments. The stuff with Punk and McIntyre, I mean, that definitely kind of hit the skids tonight. Hopefully it was just for 1 week. But the Judgment Day stuff has been hot, hot as can be. Orton and Gunther, I'm looking forward to that at Bash in Berlin. I thought what they did tonight was fine. So we have a good mix of stuff right now on Raw. But this one just didn't feel like the last two episodes. Decent enough, but again, we've had some really good shows the last few weeks, and this was a couple of notches below those two. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll, shall we? See what you guys thought of this show. And even here in the poll, you could tell, you know, it's a little bit lower than it's been. 66% thumbs up, still a good score. 20% thumbs in the middle, 13%. Thumbs down for the show tonight. So you can vote at Solomonster on social media. You know where to go. You know where to find me on there. I think, I would hope by now, since I mentioned it every week. Now let's get into your super chats because we got some messages here to get into. Thank you. Thank you for the support. And we are currently at 360 likes. Just FYI for those who want to know where we're at. That is where we are at. All right, let's take it back here to the very beginning and our good friend, Smokin' Dried Chicken, who said, how to stop Bronson Reed? Said, 5 tranquilizer shots. You know, they actually did that with Big Show on SmackDown many years ago. Kurt Angle shot a blow dart into the Big Show. He might have shot it into his ass. I don't remember. So that actually has happened before. It was probably 2003, 2004. It was definitely one of those 2 years. I want to say 2003, I think, is when that happened. Smokin' Dried Chicken also says, I would love to see the Judgment Day recruit Omos. Interesting. Well, you may be the only one. You'll be interested to know. It's funny you bring up Omos. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but there is a video going around. For those who don't know, Josh Briggs and Tavion Heights, who's part of the No Quarter Catch crew in NXT, they have been over in Japan recently. And Tavion, by the way, Tavion looks like he is having the time of his life. Like, he may not come back. He may just stay there for another 6 months. And honestly, I don't think that's such a bad idea. Like, if he wanted to stay over there for a little bit longer, I say let him. I think he's going to come back. He's going to be so much better. But they're over there, and there was a video of them. They were sitting around with the great Muta, Keiji Muta. And they asked him a question, like if Muta could choose anybody from WWE's roster to wrestle in pro wrestling Noah, who would he choose? And do you know who he mentioned? Omos. He chose Omos. The idea of Omos in pro wrestling Noah. I just can't even picture it. But if Muta gets his way, it could happen. It's not like they're doing anything else with him. Ship him over to Japan. Who knows? He might get over. He might get over and come back a better performer. Maybe he'll get Muta to come out of retirement to wrestle. Can you imagine that? Muta and Omos in a match? Stranger things have happened, man. We got NXT and TNA working together. So, stranger things have happened. Josh Carlos 98 says, can you name some of Randy Orton's best, he says, marches, matches of his career? I think the Mick Foley hardcore match from Backlash 2004 really broke him out as a star. Now, that's the match that broke him out as a star for sure, and that is one of the best matches of his entire career. So, absolutely, Mick Foley at Backlash 2004 is on that list. If you've never seen the traditional Survivor Series elimination match from 2003, Team Bischoff against Team Austin, probably the last great Survivor Series elimination match. Randy Orton was a part of that match. Randy Orton won that match. I think he might have been the sole survivor. That was a great match. Any of the Christian matches that Randy Orton had in 2011, they had at least 3 of them. The one on TV where Randy won the title from him. There was a match at Money in the Bank. There was a match at SummerSlam. All of it. All of it. Fantastic. There might have been another match, I think, over the limit or something. Check out any other matches from 2011. You cannot go wrong. Those are some of the best matches I think that Orton has ever had. The WrestleMania 30 main event. Triple Threat. Randy Orton. Batista. Daniel Bryan. And if I had to throw one more at you, I would say Randy Orton and Seth Rollins, WrestleMania 31. One of the all-time great finishes, and maybe the best RKO of all time. Probably my favorite and the best RKO of all time in that match. Orton was so happy when he hit it, by the way. Like, the story behind that is they practiced it earlier in the day. They just couldn't do it. Couldn't get it right. I think they practiced it and they couldn't get it right. Or maybe they didn't practice it at all. Maybe I'm confusing that with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. I think they tried the moonsault that ended their WrestleMania 25 match and they couldn't do it. And then during that, they're like, fuck it, we'll just do it when we're out there. And then they pulled it off perfectly. So maybe I'm confusing the two, but Orton was so happy. He was so happy. I think the referee had to goose him a little bit, like, hey, pin him. He forgot to pin the guy. So then he pinned Rollins and won the match. So there you go. That's a good sampling for you of some of the best Randy Orton matches. Josh Carlos with a couple more super chats here. Look at Josh. Yes, now he says matches. My damn autocorrect. Don't you hate when that happens? Don't you just hate when that happens? Says, I know you like retro games, but did you play Mega Man back in the day? Mega Man X is goated. I never played Mega Man X, but I absolutely played Mega Man prior to that. I don't remember the numbers just kind of run together. I think I probably played the first five or six of them. But I think my favorite would be like Mega Man 2 or Mega Man 3. Yeah, I was a Mega Man guy back then. The later ones, though, I just haven't played them, so I can't really comment on them. Donnie Yasu, after the Drew feud, I need heel or tweener punk. I think we all do. Arabian Knight, you think if Tony Khan offers Lucha Bros a big AEW deal versus an NXT deal that they would stay? In my opinion, they want main roster money or they would go back to AEW. Guerrillas of Destiny bypassed NXT. Yes, the Guerrillas of Destiny bypassed NXT because they are honorary Samoans. That's why they bypassed NXT. If they were not part of the Bloodline angle, they would be at NXT right now, wrestling Axiom and Nathan Fraser and Gallows and Anderson. So that's why they're where they are right now. No, I don't. And look, you say that your feeling is that if they got offered, but you don't know that, right? You don't know that. And I don't know that. I don't know what's in their heads. I don't know what their priority is right now. My sense is that they want to go to WWE. It may be a now or never type thing, especially for Penta. So I don't even think if Tony Khan offered them more money than they're making now, that alone would change their mind and sway them to stay. I think they're gone. It's like Jade Cargill. I'm reminded of that. Jade Cargill, in her mind, had already made the decision to go to WWE. Tony Khan wanted to keep her, said, what's it going to take? Jade came back at him with a dollar amount. Tony matched it and said, okay. He was willing to give her exactly what she asked for. She still left. Sometimes it's not just about the money. The money is important, but it's not just about the money. It's about the opportunity. If I go here for more money and I stay where I am, am I going to really be in a better spot 3 years from now than the spot that I'm in right now? If I go here to the big company and I make a little less money in the short term, the long-term payoff could be astronomical. It could be life-changing. That's what you have to weigh. But I think they've already made up their mind. Oofman Entertainment with the $12 learning tree. What's going on, Oofman? You just listed all the reasons why Punk left in the first place. Now he's a good boy running with the system. My, how things have changed. It's not the CM Punk that got over and became popular. It felt like a watered down CM Punk. It felt like the same CM Punk we got remember those first couple of weeks on TV? Where he just came out and it felt like he was being so disingenuous, like maybe it was all designed that way and we were going to come to find out that he was full of shit and they didn't do that. But that's kind of what this reminded me of. Those early Punk promos when he first came back and those really weren't that good either. Defined real. Punk is proving MJF right from their promo battle back in AEW. Well, there was a lot that they said to each other. I don't recall what the line was that you're referring to, but those were some great segments with those two. Big Show's ladder. I'm not a Cody Rhodes fan or a Cody Rhodes hater, but I remember that report from earlier this year that claimed they don't have a plan for him, and I think it's true when you compare him to how others on Raw have gone. I don't think it's that they don't have a plan. I think they do have a long-term plan, I think, with him and Randy. I just think that they've done a poor job of building up enough credible top heels on the SmackDown brand to give him people to work with until they're ready to go with Cody and Randy. Are they going to go with Cody and Randy for Bad Blood? Are they going to go with Cody and Randy and wait until WrestleMania? That's the only question left to answer. They have to do it sooner because who else do they have? They have no choice. And that's their failing. That doesn't mean that they had no plans for Cody. It just means that whatever their plans were, they should have had one or two more top shelf heels ready to go on SmackDown. And for whatever reason, they didn't. Or in the draft, you know, they made bad choices. They should have drafted other people over to SmackDown. Dan Richards, I like the Punk segment. Does that mean we have to call each other names and block each other? Circle of death. Or is it okay to disagree in the IWC? In the IWC, now you're not allowed to disagree. So that's it, man. I'm going to have to block you now. That's how it works. Thank you, Dan. Crypto in poker in Vegas, walking the strip, listening to Solomonster. I too wish that I were in Vegas, walking the strip, listening to Solomonster. But I'm here in New York. That's not as fun. Alley. How would Alex Wright have fit in 2000's WWE? Well, I think Alex Wright doing that dance would have Vince would have loved him. I think Vince would have taken one look at him and he wouldn't have been a serious, champion in the company. But I think Vince would have taken him and he would have probably given him a lot of TV time. He would have gotten a lot of real estate on TV, I think. Jerome Eugenio, the CM Punk, is like a rock band that turned pop. that's one way to put it. That's one. It's like what Howard Stern used to be as compared to what Howard Stern is today. It might be a better analogy. Dom Joseph, what made you fall in love with wrestling? For me, it was seeing John Cena live in 2008 for the first time. His fan reaction made me fall in love. What made me fall in love with wrestling were the characters from the Golden Era. I became a fan during that period with Hogan and the Macho Man and Andre and Jake. All those guys, man. Art Foundation, Demolition, King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd. It was the larger-than-life characters. And if I had to pick a specific angle, it was the Mega Powers angle. That's really where it all started for me. Retro KOH, Timu Judgment Day. Shop like a street trash douchebag. Kevin Dunn's Beaver. Taylor Swift for men is suffering succotash. I don't know if I'd go that far. It's pretty bad, though. DEH Sires, if they don't want to do Bianca and Rhea at WrestleMania in Vegas, do Io and Rhea. Io is the most over woman in the division without having to cut promos to do so. I don't disagree that Io is great, but I don't see that being the match. Dev to Dust, favorite Frank Sinatra song? New York, New York. Nick Grasso, since this Final Testament thing isn't working, maybe AOP and Paul Ellering could go do their own and Karrion Kross can join Judgment Day since they need muscle. Do you agree? You know, if Karrion Kross was not already doing the Final Testament stuff, I would be on board with that idea. I think adding him and Scarlett to the Judgment Day and having them involved in this drama and him dropping the totally like dark stuff, and just being a little more, I don't know, showing a little more personality than he has been showing with this character on TV, I would do it. I would do it. I would have him in that group with Scarlett. For him to go right from the Final Testament to the Judgment Day, though, it just doesn't work. I just don't think it works. But under different circumstances, if he wasn't already attached to another group, I'd say do it. Because they need somebody to replace Damian Priest if they're going to keep this group going in the long term. And I think Kross would fit that bill, and it could just be the thing that he needs. Honestly. It could be exactly the thing that he needs. To be part of a group like that, that's heavily featured, have those moments of levity and comedy, you know, when they're called for, have these, you know, backstage segments in the clubhouse with all this dialogue and stuff, and it's not just tarot cards and, you know, all the stuff he usually talks about. I think it could work. But I just don't see a logical way to get him from one group to the other without it just looking like, okay, this is a failed gimmick, and now we're just going to try something new with him. Because at that point, the Final Testament is dead. You could have Ellering and the Authors of Pain just go off on their own like they were in NXT. That's true. But I don't know. Trill Mexican with a $10 super chat. That CM Punk promo was so damn horrible. I went back and listened to your video of you saying Shane McMahon going to AEW is bad, which I disagree with, but that was better than whatever that promo was. My segment was better than that promo? I agree. Many of my segments are better than many of the segments I see on various wrestling shows any given week. How come I can't get a TV deal? Hey, David Zaslav, let's have a talk. Let's have a chat. Let's break bread. Let's see what I can bring to the table for you. It'd be kind of funny. Solomonster usurps AEW and gets TV deal with Warner Brothers Discovery. I'm sure Dax Harwood would write a very long dissertation about it on Twitter. But he's blocked me. Ian Noel Camelotes. $32 super chat with Bronson Reed. As they truly are making him a force to be reckoned with, to maybe even become future world heavyweight champion, maybe sometime after WrestleMania next year, how would you build him up to win the title? I mean, I could sit here and fantasy book, but he's not winning the title. He's not winning the title. Certainly not next year or around WrestleMania time or after WrestleMania. So it's a moot point anyway. He's not winning the title. But Bronson Reed, what they're doing with him now, if they were to build him up as a contender for the championship or to be champion, like, this is the type of push that you would do to get him there. The timing just doesn't work. They just put the title on Gunther. Gunther is going to hold that belt at least until WrestleMania. And I don't see Reed being in the hunt for that belt at that point. I think when Seth Rollins comes back, Rollins is going to beat him. Well, Rollins is certainly going to win the feud. And I don't know what happens at that point with Bronson Reed. Once he gets beat, I don't know if he maintains this popularity and maintains this momentum that he has. Because I think the long-term goal here, it's not necessarily about Reed and getting him over to the max. It's about Seth Rollins coming back and getting his revenge. He needed some time off. They shot the angle. He'll come back. Even if he loses the first match, which I think he should, he'll win again, or he'll win the second one, and then move on probably to feud with CM Punk, and that will be the kind of the money feud there. But yeah, I don't I don't see it. I would be okay with it. I think that Reed at some point as world heavyweight champion is something I would consider. I just don't get the impression that that's kind of the end goal here for this. I wouldn't get my hopes up about that. Yuri says, Owen against X-Pac, best spinning heel kick. Which one? X-Pac. X-Pac. X-Pac put some force on it. Owens was more, he kind of like glided through the air like a gazelle. X-Pac would just take your fucking head off with it. Whenever Owen did it, he came like bouncing off the ropes. X-Pac would just stand there and kick your head off. Jarrett Rodriguez with a 1999. So when Asuka comes back, do you see her simply reuniting with the rest of Damage Control? Or is there a chance that she turns on them? Also, I can't help but feel bad for Dakota, but these injuries are really piling up. Yeah, well, not just with Dakota, but with other people as well. But Dakota has had a rough run. She's had a rough run as far as the injuries go. Asuka, I don't know what they're going to do with Asuka, because I don't know how long Asuka's going to be out for. I think Asuka's done for the rest of the year. If Damage Control is still a thing when she comes back, I think they just reunite. That's what I think. Yuri, hope the recent rain and thunderstorm was kinder out there by you than out here on Long Island. Yeah, it was quick over here. I mean, it didn't last very long. Like, I heard the heavens opened up a few hours ago, and it was like 5 minutes and it was over. Jared again, since you're from Brooklyn, I have to ask, do you prefer Biggie or Jay-Z? Of the two, I go with Biggie. Boney. We go from Biggie to Boney. I feel like the rebellious side of Punk died at All In last year. I keep seeing him in suits, and it reminds me of his Undertaker incident from 2000. Ah, yes, the dress code incident. So now what you're saying is we have corporate Punk. Punk has gone corporate. Well, that could be an interesting heel turn. Ali 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 says, which former wrestlers would you pick for an Inside the NBA Around the Horn Bayless and Sharp hot take machine, but for the wrestling world? Bret Hart. Just put Bret Hart on the set. Ask him any question about anybody, and you know you're going to get an honest answer out of him. He will not hold back. He will not pull punches. He will tell it like it is. He will not be afraid to offend people. Just call it... Come up with some kind of fancy name for it. Something with the word hitman in it. I will tune in. It could be anybody, really, just asking Brett for his thoughts on various subjects. Justin says, as a New York guy, gold, silver, bronze, Too Short, Snoop, Ice Cube. Too Short? I don't know who that is. I mean, come on, you gotta give the gold to Ice Cube. I'm sorry, to Snoop. Silver to Ice Cube, and then bronze to the other guy. The Learning Sicko, Dr. Bropio. Taylor Swift for men is better than rah-rah speeches for AEW. And Chris Mikesell. Hey, Solo, hope you have a great week. What is your favorite Attitude Era title? European, hardcore, or light heavyweight? And what match from that title? I love the hardcore title in the earlier days when they had the matches where they would end up outside. There was a match, it might have been the night that Road Dogg won the belt, and I want to say it was against Al Snow. And I think they ended up outside in the snow. There was a SummerSlam match with Al Snow and the Big Boss Man that spilled outside, and they ended up in traffic crossing the road to get to some giant bar or restaurant across the street, and they brawled in there. Al Snow and Bob Holly fought into the fucking Mississippi River at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre pay-per-view. I love that shit. I love that stuff. And then the 24/7 stuff with Crash Holly, which included him on the super slide at Funtime USA, which used to be a place here in Brooklyn, isn't there anymore. Hasn't been there for many years, but I used to be there all the time. I actually met Shawn Michaels and Sid at different signings at Funtime USA. So watching Crash go down the super slide and in the ball pit as the head fuckers were chasing after them, that was fun. That was fun. So I got to go hardcore title. As far as the physical title is concerned, though, I love the European title. I love the colors in the European title. And right now, let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Al Snow's European title gimmick was funny as fuck. Yeah, every week he would come out dressed up as, dressed up in some form or fashion to represent a different European country. So one week he would come out as a Frenchman. Another week he would come out as a German. Another week he would come out as a Spaniard. It was something different every week. It was very entertaining. I put that right behind the Crash Holly hardcore title run. All right. Always like to start the week with some Be the Booker. Let's see how we do here. Oh, look at this team. Wow, what a team here from 1998. The summer of 98 on the highway to hell. Before they wrestled at SummerSlam, Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker were tag team champions. I believe this is the first time that we have landed on these two. Austin and The Undertaker. Stone Cold and The Undertaker are going to take on Edge and Christian. What a match. I mean, we know who's winning, but what a match. That is how you kick off Be the Booker. I like it. I like it. All right, women's Be the Book. Oh, Maxine. Oh, no. Poor Maxine Dupri. She has injured her ankle again. Which means we're not picking Maxine. We're picking again. So let's wipe the slate clean and start over again here. We begin with the lovely Maryse. Maryse, you remember the segment on Raw when Maryse and The Miz shared a moment? This is before they got together, before they got married. This is like in the early days when Miz, I want to say Miz was still like the host, right? He had just joined the company. Or maybe not just joined, but it was like a few years in. But there was a segment, they were on Raw, they were on the stage together. And they're like face to face looking at each other. And they get a camera shot of Maryse's face, and she's looking up at The Miz, and she has these eyes. I mean, these are like the fuck me eyes, okay? And the way she's like staring at this guy, and I'm like, this motherfucker is the luckiest son of a bitch in the world. And I don't think it was that long after that that they started going out together. She was a knockout. She still is. She still is a knockout. But back then, oh my goodness, she was a beautiful woman. All right, Maryse. Let's just admire this for a second. Okay, I'm done. Rhea Ripley. Never in my life, I say I like skulls. Never in my life have I wanted to be a skull more than I do right now. Rhea Ripley and Maryse. How are we feeling about that match? I'm liking this Be the Booker tonight, man. This is going good. This is going very well. This is going very well. But of course, we're not done yet until we book a main event. here we go. Look at this. Mr. Monday Night. Rob Van Dam. RVD. Kicking us off. All right. This is it. RVD. No. Oh, fucking Rock. Tried to take a spot away from someone. RVD and Ravishing Rick Rude. That's an interesting match. RVD and Ravishing Rick Rude. But you know what? That's 3 for 3. That indeed is 3 for 3. RVD in his prime, Ravishing Rick Rude in his prime. That would have been a great match. Best sell of the Atomic Drop forever will be Ravishing Rick Rude. Mr. Perfect, not far behind. But Rick Rude just was on another level from everybody else at selling the Atomic Drop. You don't see Atomic Drops anymore. That's kind of a move that dropped out of wrestling. We just don't see it anymore. Or at least, you know, when it actually does happen, like, no one really sells it. I miss the Atomic Drop. We need to start a campaign to bring back the Atomic Drop. I will start the petition, and we can bring that move back. Rick inspired his airbrush tights. It's a good point. That is a very good point. RVD, of course, had the airbrush tights, but Ravishing Rick Rude had Jake the Snake Roberts' wife airbrushed onto his crotch. That was years before RVD was a star. Book an Atomic Drop off for Hog. I might have to. I'm going to have to gather up the troops at the next show and say, look, I better start seeing some Atomic Drops in some of these matches. It's a good point. I should start flexing some of my muscle here. Arabian Knight with the super chat coming in here. What if AJ Styles got traded to Raw and joined the Judgment Day? I still feel like it should be somebody of a physical stature comparable to a Damian Priest, you know, like a bigger guy. It could work, though. I think it could work. He wouldn't be my first choice, though. But you do have the Bullet Club history with him and Finn. So Styles and Finn in the same group, I think that would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, it could work. It's not like they're doing anything else. They're doing fuck all with AJ now anyway. So shit, I mean... Stick a fork in him on SmackDown. You almost have to move him over to Raw. So maybe that is the best use of him. Devin from New Jersey, 2000. Does Solomonster agree with Chelsea Green that wrestling is not about winning, but making people feel a certain way? Well, you know, the people who say that are the people like Chelsea Green who don't win any matches. So, I'm just saying, you know, if Chelsea Green was going out there and winning matches every single week, I don't think that she would be making that comment. It's like the people who, if they're in any sport, right? It doesn't have to be wrestling. It could be any sport. And they don't do well. Like, they're on a team. Their team generally loses. They have a terrible record. But they're like, you know, it's not about winning and losing. It's about the love of the game, right? It's like, no, you're a fucking loser. And that's why you feel that way. And if you were winning, you would have a very different opinion. Power Spying Games with a $6 super chat. Hey, Power Spying Games. Thank you, man. I'm going to All In on Sunday. If I could, I would refund the ticket. Other than Mariah May and Toni Storm... and Danielson and Swerve, I am not hyped at all. So you're not hyped for Will Ospreay and MJF? Because I think they've done a pretty good job hyping that up. I feel like the key matches on the show have been promoted well. Danielson and Swerve, MJF and Ospreay, Tony and Mariah, Britain, Mercedes, not so much. I mean, it still is a big match for that division. And it's a first time ever match, you know, never been done before. But it's been lacking, to say the least. And the suspension that Britt had didn't help matters, her being off TV. So, I mean, I think those key matches have been promoted well. The tag team title match, I don't give a shit. I mean, the way they put that together just doesn't interest me at all. What else do we have? Darby and Jack Perry. Yeah, I mean, not a great build-up to it. I'm looking forward to the match. By the way, if you didn't see it, you should go to Jack Perry's Twitter. He posted a maybe on Instagram too. He posted a video of him making the TNT title now that he's carrying around. It was the traditional TNT title. And then it shows what he did to get it to look the way that it looks now, where it's like blackened and it's got that little bit of red in it. It's actually pretty badass. And the final product, as far as the belt itself, I actually like the way the belt looks. Even though he kind of like destroyed it. I think it looks pretty cool. But go check that video. I mean, like, you could tell, like, Anna Jay, she's over in Japan. Like, she's in stardom right now. He's probably just fucking bored. So he's just like, all right, she's away. I'm by myself. I'm going to experiment here with this belt. And he's pouring, like, it looked like fucking lava that he, like, was pouring over it. Like, it was a whole experiment that he did. It was actually kind of interesting. Yuri. My dad had a VHS as a kid of Rick Rude, his best matches, made me a mega fan. I don't know why, but mainly I remember the knee drop off the top on Sting from it. Yep, the knee drop off the top was one of his moves. I saw him do that to the Warrior. He gave the Ultimate Warrior one of his best matches in the company. I would argue he gave the Ultimate Warrior probably his second best match in the company. SummerSlam 89. Warrior's best matches were Savage at WrestleMania 7, Hogan at WrestleMania 6, and Rick Rude at SummerSlam 89. So if Rick Rude could give the Ultimate Warrior one of his best matches, then you know he's a good fucking worker. Shout out to Carlos, who's been a channel member for 33 months. And thank you, by the way. That reminds me, Justin G, I see you in the chat. Justin gifted some channel memberships earlier tonight, right when I was going live. Justin, thank you. I meant to mention that earlier. Carlos says, my new day earlier in the stream was very impressive. Well, thank you. If you're going to say it, you got to say it the right way. Yeah. Ultra Beast Boys. Your desk rose 2 inches thinking about Maurice. Is that supposed to be an insult? Because I don't have my tape measure here, but I thought it was at least 4.5, but okay. As I said earlier, we, with episode 875, cracked the top 5. Number 4. Yesterday's episode of The Sound Off was number 4 for all wrestling podcasts across the country on Apple Podcasts. And Apple is by far where most people listen to the show. So that is pretty cool. We are sandwiched in between Jim Cornette and Eric Bischoff. And actually beat out CM Punk live at Fanatics Fest from The Ringer. I guess that was Punk did a whole thing at Fanatics Fest, and I guess they turned it into a podcast, and we beat that out. So thank you again for the love. If you did not see, or listen, I should say, to episode 875, please make sure you go back and check it out. That was yesterday's podcast, so it is still relevant. So go check that out. And also, again, on Apple, leave a review. Spotify, you can leave comments as well now, as well as a review. And that always helps the show out, too. So thank you for all the support. Yuri, with a $5 super chat, Triple H and Tony Khan burner accounts, sharing words in the IWC for 500, Alex. That would be kind of funny if, if like, Nick Khan and Tony Khan were going at it on their burners. probably happens more than you think. And Fox Star Killer. Buy, sell. Rock Austin role reversal, alternate timeline. Their respective characters remain fundamentally the same. They're just given each other's career runs. So, corporate Austin and renegade Rock. Is that basically what we're looking at here? You know what? As over as they were, I think, of course, they could have made that work. I just can't, you know, Austin, though, in that role. We needed babyface, anti-authority Steve Austin. He was the everyman. It just wouldn't feel right. You know, it just wouldn't. It wouldn't feel right if he did it the other way. I will be live with you guys on Wednesday night after Dynamite. That's the final Dynamite before All In. Dynamite on Wednesday is from Cardiff, Wales. So I don't know how many tickets they've sold, but it should be a hot crowd in Cardiff. And we've got Okada and Claudio one-on-one for the first time for the Continental Championship. And if Okada is going to be on that show on Sunday, which I think he should be, it could be against Jon Moxley. So I'm going to be waiting to see if Moxley makes an appearance on Dynamite, maybe after the match. And they set up a Continental match for Wembley. We'll find out. So that'll be on Wednesday night, and then Friday is the SmackDown recap, and I believe that I'm going to keep you guys posted on what's going on with episode 876. 876 actually may end up being a big show because I have to do my all-in predictions. It's also, for those who don't know, this weekend is the one-year anniversary of the passing of Bray Wyatt, so I'm sure I'll have some words about that, but there's another thing that I am working on. For those who are not aware, next week, I believe it's next Monday, is the 25-year anniversary of the debut of SmackDown. And I'm not counting the pilot episode that aired in April of 99. I'm talking about SmackDown going on the air weekly, starting in August of 1999. 25-year anniversary is coming up next week. And so what I am in the process of doing is putting my own little top 25 countdown together of the best SmackDown matches and moments. And that will likely be a special feature on episode 876. So I'm working on that. I don't know exactly when it will be up. My hope is that the episode will be up by midday on Saturday. Usually the podcasts are up on Sunday, but we have All In. And I will be live after All In, after the 18-hour pay-per-view is over. I will be live on YouTube, so I cannot do a podcast that day. So I'm going to try to get a podcast done. I'm going to try to do it a day early. Fingers crossed. Wish me luck. Plus, whatever other news there is between now and then. So I'll keep you guys posted on that. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great rest of your night and rest of your week. Hopefully I will see you for the other streams. And again, thank you for all of the love tonight. I appreciate it very much. KCC became a channel member, getting it in there right at the last minute. 25 years of SmackDown, though. Can you imagine that? I still remember when that show premiered. The super kick heard around the world, man, in that main event. Time flies. See you guys on Wednesday for the Dynamite stream. Take care.